We present the news quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Hello and welcome to the news quiz. We start with a World Cup cutting from the Sydney Morning Herald, read by Zeb Soans.
Germany, who are forbidden from having sex the night before a game, have orchestrated a come-from-behind victory over Algeria.
And our thanks to Luke Stone for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right, Andy Hamilton and Fred McCauley. And opposite them on my left, journalist and broadcaster Samira Ahmed, along with Jeremy Hardy. Andy, why does illness mean healthy competition for private firms?
There are certain sort of trios of words which probably shouldn't be used together in combination, because the overall effect is just rather unappealing. Trios of words like Blair, peace, and envoy. And one of these trios of unfortunate words is cancer care privatisation, because instinctively and inevitably, it just summons up this sort of nightmare picture of G4S and Serco running hospitals where the cancer wards are manned by recently arrived, undertrained Latvian students, and the chemotherapy drips all have meters on them. And if that sounds a little bit cynical, I mean, it is based on observed experience, because for decades now we have watched governments hand over the utilities and services to companies like G4S and Serco, and we have watched as they basically ruin them, and then once they've ruined them, they get given some more to ruin until they're running all sorts of services. They're now huge, these companies. I mean, I still hanker after the good old days when G4S was just Group 4 and its core business was letting prisoners escape from vans. I suspect it is really a done deal. I think that 10 years from now, people will be sitting in cancer wards, in waiting rooms, watching a smiling hologram of Richard Branson.
Wow. I mean,
that's probably...
That's a scary thought.
It is.
That's Richard Branson's company, Virgin, is one of the ones trying to get this deal, isn't it, for cancer care?
Which means the care might not be good, but there'll be plenty of announcements telling us what's happening.
You'd think, though, with their trains and air travel, that they're well experienced in dealing with extreme discomfort and unhappiness, so...
I had a blood test the other day, and they weren't the NHS. They thought, you're not wearing upside-down watches, you're not nurses. They were wearing tabards that said something like, the Transylvanian Blood Service. And I had to go after dark, which was a bit weird.
I've already got an idea, though, to help make money out of this. I'm going to have a website, a comparison website for medical provision. I'm going to call it Drip Advisor. It's got to be done. Got to be done.
It's all thoroughly depressing, isn't it? I mean, they've made such a hash of the prisons. I think, why give them cancer care as a starting out point? I mean, give them Saturday night drunks and sprains to deal with and see how they get on with that. Because it's when you get cancer care that everybody says that the NHS is at its best. And, you know, sorry if I do sound depressed, but it's been a bad week for us.
I thought it was
with Andy Murray going out.
Who's he going out with?
Nadal. But you know what I was thinking about, Andy? I didn't know the score because I was travelling on a Virgin train, and you don't get Wi-Fi anymore that will give you enough broadband to see anything happening on the internet. You can maybe send an email. But then when I arrived in London last night, I saw him on TV doing his interview. I thought, oh, he's won.
I thought it was interesting that it's Staffordshire where they're tendering for this 10-year contract, because one thing critics of the government say is that they've been perhaps accused of using these negative stories. And, of course, Mid-Staffordshire had that terrible scandal about patient care. And then isn't it interesting that this is where privatisation has been pushed through to make care better?
Yeah, but giving someone the job of end of life is quite worrying when they're in the private sector, isn't it? End of life care, but then care could mean anything, couldn't it? Right, we'll take care of it, don't worry. It'll look like she slipped away peacefully in the night.
But just, they're saying things like these. I think they're called clinical commissioning groups. One of the things they said was that most people's wish is to die at home. And you think, if I had a wish, it would be to not die at home. Or indeed anywhere else. It's not. It's nothing I wish for.
Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. We should maybe do a poll. Where would you like to die, audience? At home or in bed with someone much younger than you?
That, seriously, that can't happen at home? Seriously, that could you not? The NHS's cancer care could be privatised for the first time, with the health service's biggest ever outsourcing of services in a deal worth over £1.2 billion. Virgin, Care UK, Ramsay Health and other private firms have already expressed interest in securing 10-year contracts to provide cancer care at four NHS commissioning group areas in Staffordshire. Virgin Care is owned by Richard Branson and would provide care for various parts of Surrey, while Ramsay Health is presumably owned by Gordon Ramsay and provides the service of shouting and swearing at you for not getting better. According to their plans, Virgin Care will offer cancer treatment Monday to Saturday and a chemotherapy replacement service on Sundays. Virgin Care. Doesn't that sound the title of the worst erotic novel of all time? 2 points to Andy. Fred. Who thinks it is no party game being gamed out of the party?
Now, I'm not altogether sure how to pronounce the surname of this gentleman. Is it John Crudas? Crudas?
Crudity? I think it is.
Crudity?
How do you pronounce it, sir? So how do you...
I've not had him recently.
You've not had him recently? No. Not a prerequisite for knowing how to say his name, but... There's
nothing I can say is going to top that, I'll tell you. Well, the thing about John Crudas is that I've never heard of him. It is about an expression that I've never heard of, that within the Labour Party, some things were being stalled by a dead hand. It sounds a lot worse than a lame duck, doesn't it?
Yeah.
In a lame duck, you can think you can maybe treat it, but a dead hand? Nah. Amputation.
Did you work out what it was, the dead hand?
Bowls.
Well, pardon?
Beg your pardon?
Bowls. Yeah.
Is the dead hand the Labour leader? Is that what he's saying?
Well, that's what I thought.
Right.
But do you think it's bowls?
No, I think it's bowls because...
I think it's true. Did anybody see bowls on Andrew Marr? He used his favourite adjective 9 times. He said that there are going to be big reforms with a big plan. They've got big ideas. There's going to be a big report, big speech coming, wow. Big deal, big devolution, big changes, and big public investment. And I would love to have said to you, and what do you think your chances of winning are at the next election? Small.
So was there a headline saying big balls announcements on the
I read a transcript of this leaked recording. And it was pretty sort of watery stuff, really. I mean, he's mildly critical of the direction of the party. But the headline was, Labour divided, says top strategist. And it did strike me that the right-wing press have got a bit of a problem. For years, they were addicted to the very intense Blair-Brown hatred. And now they're sort of going through cold turkey. You know, they haven't really got a proper Labour punch-up yet. So, they, you know, I think we will start to see... headlines like...
Big punch-up.
Yeah. Yeah. Balls raises eyebrow during Miliband speech.
But was it something that Ball said about John Crudas not being frustrated, but actually being excited?
And yes, he was very excited about
it. And so it's a bit like, you know, you can be sexually excited or sexually frustrated, and this is sort of the same, but policy.
Have we moved into a therapy area for you, Samira?
Well, I suppose, you know, you can be sexually frustrated and excited if you think that you're heading towards some kind of electoral climax, surely.
Speaking of which, did you see the good news that ex-Labour leader Neil Kinnock has spoken out for Miliband? You just think, how comforting to receive the support of that multi-election winning political powerhouse. Ed Miliband's policy adviser MP John Crudas has warned that the Labour leader was being gamed out on a weekly basis and that a lot of things haven't been reconciled within the party. In a recording from an event at the Fabian Society, Crudas said the Labour leader was struggling to manage the news cycle. He also criticised Miliband's failure to reconcile the two camps in the Labour Party, one camp who believe Ed Miliband is an ineffectual leader and the other consisting of Ed Miliband. The Labour leader quickly refuted the claims by awkwardly holding a copy of The Sun and attempting to eat a bacon sandwich. 2 points to Fred. Samira, who is feeling miserable about his mise en examen?
This is the former French president, Nicolas Sarkozy, who's become the first political leader, I think, to actually be held in custody in France. And he was being questioned about, I think they call it meddling in the legal process, and he's accused of using a judge to find out about these investigations against him for alleged corruption over funding for his campaigns, which kind of potentially carries a €500,000 fine and 5 years in prison. There's a whole argument in France that because he's right-wing, they think that French judges are seeking revenge on him, because when he got elected, he described magistrates as indistinguishable little peas, or indeed petits pois, as I could say with my O-level French. And he said they were the same colour, the same size, and the same lack of flavour.
Not a good idea.
Yeah, I mean, his supporters, it's a conspiracy against him.
I like the idea, though, that they're paranoid that the magistracy is a hotbed of radical leftism, because apparently the guy is the head of the magistrates' union. I think this is fantastic, because magistrates in this country are just local busybodies who've been frustrated by the paltry powers that they're given as a school governor, they've worked their way up through the PTA and they become a governor, but they don't get to send anyone to prison or anything like that. They get so frustrated, you know, they've tried joining a choir, but then they had to just sing in tune with everybody else. And their ego is so untrammelled, they have to become a magistrate.
I mean, if Sarkozy does get found guilty of corruption, then the entire French nation will go boof. Because that is their reaction to it. I was in France in 76 when Nixon was caught burgling the offices of his opponents, and the French thought it was hilarious. And their reaction generally was, oh, everyone's, they're all at it. I mean, their national sport is shrugging. So.
Well, some of the evidence against Nicolas Sarkozy was obtained by phone tap, which is interesting, because you think, why bother? They could just ring up the CIA and say, what did he say?
But there's loads of European stuff, isn't there? Because we've got Francis Sarkozy being investigated. We've got Italy's Berlusconi's been convicted. We've got the Spanish princess, who's charged with fraud. Surely it's our turn now. Yeah. If only we had a former leader who could be tried for some sort of, I don't know, war crimes.
It really does indicate the difference between the United Kingdom and France, doesn't it? In France, a politician offering jobs or favour to a magistrate for information is a scandal. Over here, we call it the honours system.
We don't have anything like it in Denmark, I have to say. Last week, there was a little bit of a frisson. The Prime Minister, who I love, Helle Thorning-Schmidt, you know, the one who took the selfie at Mandela's funeral. I think there was a thing in the paper last week. She took home a pen by mistake from the office, and that caused a great... That's it, really. Don't really do scandal.
Did you see that story about her where she's being mooted as a possible candidate for some senior office, and the headline in the Daily Mail was, Neil Kinnock's son's wife mooted for senior
Fantastic.
Office.
I like this. The mayor of Nice, who's also a member of the French Parliament, Christian Estrosi, he said no former French leader had ever experienced such a surge of hate. And you thought, well, you've read no French history at all, have you? No idea.
And loads of them. I mean, Chirac was done for... What was he done for?
Armed robbery.
No. Chirac and Mitterrand was...
Mitterrand was dead by the time it was all investigated, but several...
How very convenient.
Some of it, one of the allegations is that Sarkozy illegally received €50 million from Gaddafi. You think, what are they worried about? It's not like you've got to give it back.
I love the idea, though, that they're out for him because the judges are all on the far left in France, and they sit him down and say, Monsieur Sarkozy, you are charged with not having read Volume 7 of Capital.
No, they're jealous because he's married to Carla Bruni.
That's what he should be tried for, being way out of his league.
Former French President Nicolas Sarkozy was put under official investigation or mise en examen for corruption and misuse of influence this week after spending 15 hours in police custody. Sarkozy is under formal investigation after he tried to obtain information about an investigation being carried out over whether he illegally accepted millions in campaign donations from Liliane Bettencourt, the heiress of the L'Oréal company. She defended the donation, saying it was because he's worth it. If convicted, the ex-president could face up to a decade in jail, or as it's known in Europe, 10 Berlusconis. 2 points to Samira. Jeremy, why is working 9 to 5 now not necessarily the way to make a living?
Oh, this is very exciting. Man rings up the local circus and he says, how difficult is it to train to be a contortionist? They said, well, how flexible are you? He says, you can't do Tuesdays. This is about flexible working. But it says, oh, you know, people are going to be able to work flexi-time. They're not. They've just been given the right to ask their boss if they can do flexi-time. Because up until now, in employment law, you had no right to ask your boss stuff. You'd say, sorry, is there a guard on this lathe? Who dares to question the great and powerful odd? And you'd say, is it possible I could do flexi-time? And they'd say, well, that's an unanswerable question, really. I mean, you know, can you do a flexi-time? Can you not? I mean, how long's a bit of string? So you're getting nowhere. But then the mighty Clegg steps forward to make his big announcement, because he's been allowed out this week. And this is going to be great news for him, because, I mean, presumably, you know, he's spoken to Cameron. He said, is it all right maybe this week if I don't sit next to you in the House of Commons? And Cameron said, have you been sitting next to me in the House of Commons? Yeah. Well, how long for? Well, since 2010. Have you? Oh, you don't need to do that. You're not a servant, but you're using way too much polish on there. You just need a tiniest bit and then buff it to a shine. So, yeah, so he's now doesn't have to turn up every day.
But the thing about it is that the employer can say no, can't they?
Yeah, of course they
can. There's no right to this flexible.
No, you're just allowed to ask.
You could say, can I have a free hovercraft? And they say, no, that you can't.
You don't have the right to ask for that yet, though.
What, the hovercraft?
No. Yeah, you have no right. And, Laura, if you ask for a hovercraft, you can be imprisoned.
But does your boss have to give you a sound reason for the no? They do.
In theory, you have a right to request, and the boss has an obligation to give you a reasonable answer. So fundamentally, the government are proposing to legalise normal conversation. And pass it off as some fantastic progressive reform.
You can't have employees deciding their own working hours. I mean, if you did that, you'd get an ice cream van jingling mournfully at 3 o'clock in the morning round a housing estate. Oh, well, the hours suited me. I mean, it'd be impossible.
I mean, there were a lot of sort of hymns in the papers, sort of hymns of praise to flexible working. And, of course, for parents with young children, it's useful, it makes sense. But, I mean, as a freelancer, you know, I've worked flexible hours for a very long time, and the idea that you're necessarily going to be more productive isn't... You know, because if you work from home, there are a lot of distractions at home. There's the fridge.
Yeah.
There's Wimbledon. There's Countdown. I mean, the other thing in these articles was it's portrayed very much as an employee-orientated move, but I wonder if a lot of employers will love the idea of more employees working from home, because it means they can devolve an awful lot of, you know, they don't have to have premises, you know, they can reduce overheads.
Well, they'll spin it, won't they? They'll say, wouldn't you like more flexibility in your life now? I mean, you're 54 now, wouldn't you like to be a bit more flexible, maybe by not coming in at all, not having the burden of an income?
As of this week, every employee now has the right to request flexible working hours after the government extended the right previously reserved for carers and for those who had children and weren't content with them being brought up by wolves. The change came in on Monday, and by Tuesday there was chaos at railway stations with some train drivers deciding to work from home. Already making use of the change is Andy Murray, who took the rest of Wimbledon off. At the end of round one, the scores are Andy and Fred have got 4 points, but so too have Samira and Jeremy. We start round two with an event listing from the University of Bedfordshire.
Leon Bratt is the winner of the acoustic category of Live and Unsigned 2012. Judges commented, Leon has been playing guitar for over 13 years and wouldn't swap that instrument for anything. He also plays drums, bass, piano and harmonica.
And our thanks to Amy Manners for sending us that. Andy, who logged on to find his article had blogged off?
Yes, this is the right to be forgotten. There was a human rights ruling by the European Court. Wake up at the back. And it said that... I think the principle of it was quite sound. It sort of said that if you were guilty of some teenage indiscretion or something, you had the right for that not to remain on the public record. But now what's happened is that 50,000 or so fairly unsavoury individuals have applied to Google in order to get various things expunged from the record. And Robert Peston has had an article that he wrote in 2008 attacking bankers expunged. Mm. Why? I should imagine there are quite a few articles attacking bankers in the last few years. Why they would pick on that one? There is a theory that suggests they did it deliberately to annoy Robert Peston so that he would go on Twitter, because Google want the legislation, the ruling reversed. So if their next piece to expunged is by Stephen Fry, we'll know that theory is correct. But, you know, I bow to no man in my antipathy towards the internet, but I think we have to accept that it's here, and you can't... You know, I'm prepared to go out on a limb and say I don't think it's a fad, and I don't.
But you, did you not? You didn't have a computer for a long. You were like Amish for a long time, weren't you, darling? I seem to remember you didn't have a computer for a long time.
My missus is my gateway to the internet. You know, I still think that witches live there. But anyway.
So you can never get divorced, or no food would be delivered.
I just starve in the dark if we get divorced. But fundamentally, we have to accept that privacy died somewhere around 1993. And, you know, we traded it off for speed and convenience. We can't selectively recreate. In principle, I do approve of the notion of a right to be forgotten, provided it's applied exclusively to Piers Morgan.
Yeah.
I think that would be very funny if Piers woke up tomorrow and every reference to him had been expunged. from the internet, or from everything.
But the thing about the internet is you can never... I mean, it's only in the EU. You can still see the removed article on the American version of Google. I'm good old America. You can't imagine them ever covering anything up. It's good. It's...
But it's, crucially, it's not the piece doesn't exist on the internet. It's just everyone uses Google and it won't come up in the search, and that's how you don't find it.
So I think it's censorship gone mad. They're going to be removing all the revenge porn I posted of Zeb, so I...
Awful though, when you know whatever you've done since or whatever you're doing now, some awful, terrible thing that you did years and years ago is repeated on Dave.
But what I want to know, does this forgetting, does it work for the whole of Google? I mean, can you have your house expunged from Street View? Is there just a sort of sign that says, good, here be dragons?
It's the aerial one, is that Google?
What would happen if you put solar panels on your roof and on the solar panels you had written a Robert Peston 2008 banker's article?
I honestly think you'd be taken away. That's the the BBC's economics editor, Robert Peston, has received notification from search engine Google that a blog he wrote in 2007 about the stewardship of US investment bank Merrill Lynch by Stan O'Neill will no longer appear in its search results. This follows the EU's right to be forgotten ruling, which came into force this week, but has been followed by the Lib Dems for some time. The blog that will no longer show up on Google searches related to American investment bank Merrill Lynch, and due to the internet's permissive attitude to violent threats against female celebrities, if you type in Lynch Merrill, it comes up with a whole different set of results. 2 points to Andy. Fred, why should we be bugged by a resistance to drugs?
Well, for those of us that think that humans are at the top of the food chain, we're not. It's bacteria, and there's lots of them about. They're super bugs. And Mr. Cameron has suggested that we sort this out. So to sort this out, he's appointed an economist. That's a bit like having your plumbing not working and deciding to get a mathematician in. And he said that it's going to plunge science into the dark ages, and it's just pretty much following economics, because that's, that's where we are with the economy. Sorry to depress you all.
Didn't you play Private Fraser in Dad's Army?
If there is a remake, I'm... Man, I wouldn't miss this for £2. That gig is mine.
But the thing about antibiotics is you have to take them for a week, after which you'll probably be better anyway. But people say they do give them out like Smarties, but then I've never been to a GP that gives out Smarties, so I think that's a slightly spurious analogy. But we are giving them too much.
Normally, yeah, but apparently part of the problem is that antibiotics enter the food chain because they're given to so many animals. And yeah. The basic thing is that, you know, vets shouldn't give antibiotics to a pony just because he's a little horse. I think it's... Did I sound serious on the lead-up? I sounded serious. What I liked is Cameron said. Penicillin was a great British invention by Alexander Fleming in 1928. I thought, how encouraging that our Prime Minister doesn't know the difference between inventing something and discovering it by accident.
Yeah, wasn't it discovered by he knocked something over and it grew?
He left the Petri dish over a weekend.
So what we need to do is let some more Scottish drunks loose in laboratories over a weekend, and by the end of it, they'll have found a cure for everything.
Why don't they give out placebos? I mean, if people demand antibiotics, why don't they just give them sugar pills with Latin names?
Homeopathy, you mean?
Yeah.
That's Greek, isn't it? That's Greek, sorry.
David Cameron has called for governments and drug companies to accelerate the discovery of a new generation of antibiotics. The Prime Minister has announced a review of the issue led by Jim O'Neill, a man with no specialist knowledge on the subject, but whose previous job as chief economist at Goldman Sachs at least makes him an expert on parasites utterly resistant to intervention. 2 points to Fred. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting they would like to share?
I've got one sent in by Todd Colby. It's a press cutting from the Mail online website. And it says, German police have apologised to a one-armed cyclist after they pulled him over and fined him for riding one-handed.
I've got one sent in by Neil Rankin, and this is from the menu at the Lake District Aquarium in Maryport. Starter, homemade soup. All our soups are suitable for vegetarians, except our potato and leek soup.
Anything from you, Mr. Hardy?
This is from Stuart Swift of Watford, who says, I enclose a photo of a condom machine in the gents' toilets of a pub in Port Isaac, Cornwall. And it's a condom machine, and on it, it says, pull knob out to fullest extent and return briskly.
Let's take a look at the final score. Samira and Jeremy have got 12 points, but this week's winners are Andy and Fred with 13. Before we leave you, here is a cutting from the Great Yarmouth Mercury sent in by Stephen and Mary Wright.
Cyclists who spanned the 260 miles from Yarmouth on the Isle of Wight to Great Yarmouth have raised over £5,000. Keith Collins said the bike ride was one of many sponsored events he'd organised over the years, including marathons, skydives, and sleeping with pigs.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Andy Hamilton, Fred McCauley, Samira Ahmed, and Jeremy Hardy. In the chair was Sandy Toksvig, and the news was read by me, Zeb Service. The chair script was written by Benjamin Partridge, Roderick Crooks, and Tom Meenan, with additional material by Frog Stone, Gabby Hutchinson-Crouch, and Max Davis. The producer was Lindsay Fenner.